Blog Talk Radio.
The streets don't love you back. Stay tuned every Wednesday at 11:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 8:30 Pacific, with your host, Boyz and Lucinda, for the hottest talk show in existence. The streets don't love you back.
Good evening and welcome to the Streets Don't Love You Back show. Today is September 15th, 2010. I'm your host, Lucinda, with my co-host, Boyz. Our topic is, as always, the streets don't love you back. Join us every Wednesday night with real people, real stories, and real changes as we hear the truth about gangs, drugs, violence, abuse, and other life issues. We have an awesome show for you tonight with a very special lady, Miss Stephanie Guillory out of Oakley, California. Miss Guillory is the owner of Gigi's Fashions and also the administrator accountant for Core Concepts. But Stephanie's story goes way farther back than that. We're going to start from her birth and childhood, and Stephanie was actually born as a result of rape, and during her childhood was molested by various members of family and other people, and she became a runaway and just abused by different men in her life, and she's going to tell us her story and clear up to present day to some other traumatic events that have happened in her life. And before we formally introduce Stephanie, I'm going to introduce my co-host, Boyz, to the show.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and we thank everybody for tuning in to the show like we always do every week. And we definitely thank our guests for coming out and telling her story to open up other people's eyes to you can always seek God and you can always learn from someone else's mistake before it won't happen to you and be aware of what's going on around you at all times. So we would just like to give her a big thanks for sharing her story tonight. And like we always say, here's each one teach one. And we thank everyone once again. And stay tuned in every week. And I'll pass the mic back over.
Okay, Stephanie. We're going to go ahead and give you the mic here and let you introduce yourself.
Okay. Hi, my name is Stephanie Guillory. The owner of Gigi's Lifestyle, which is a resource center online, and a mother of three. One of my children was murdered in May 13th, 2010. I was born out of rape and rejection, molestation, abandonment. I had all those issues growing up as a child, which led me to a child that just kind of spiraled out of control early on in my life. I was molested from the age of 5 to 12, and that's when I began to run away and just had to be taught by the streets and just raised in the streets. And just a number of relationships and people that I trusted, male figures, have raped and molested me periodically through my life. And let's see, just a life full of turmoil. Drugs. I began using drugs at an early age. Became a teen mother at the age of 15. And by the time I was 21, I had three children. I had began using drugs at the age of 17, and pretty much that pretty much spiraled out of control until I was around 25 when I finally got clean and just went through a lot of hell in my life and overcome a lot.
You sure have. You know, I'm going to let you just kind of take a deep breath for a minute. I know you're nervous, and it's kind of hard for you to talk about and we appreciate you wanting to come on and share your story, because we know that, you know, that your story is an awesome story, and only because you've been such a strong person and been able to learn so much from it, and we know that your story will reach out and touch so many lives, I'm sure of. And so we just thank you again for being able to come on and talk to us and share your story. Let's go back again now to the beginning and tell us the story of how you were conceived out of rape.
Well, growing up, I probably found out when I was around, 5 years old. I always knew something was different about me than my sister, because I didn't have the father, physical father there. But I didn't find out, I believe I was around 5 years old. You know, my cousins used to tease me, you know, ha-ha, your mama got raped. She walking down the street and got pulled in a car. You know, later on in my life, I found out the truth about her rape. And basically the bonding that a mother and a child is supposed to have, we didn't have it. You know, I desired it from her. You know, and she was unable to give me that. I could remember when I started being molested at the age of 5, just feeling different. And it was always if it was by my uncle, my mother's brother, if I didn't allow him to have sex with me, I couldn't go to the store and get candy with the rest of the kids. So I could remember a lot of times going in the bathroom and looking at myself in the mirror saying, I hate myself, I hate myself, punching myself in the nose and banging my head on the wall and really just feeling lonely and lost and by myself and wanting to be accepted by anybody, which I believe that's what allowed me to say yes when I didn't want to say yes to my uncle when he did what he did to me.
Right.
So that pretty much.
Go ahead.
That pretty much led to rebellion. And you know, back then I remember, you know, being called fast, you know, fast, smart mouth, suck my teeth. But no one really knew what my pain was. So that just really led to a life of rebellion. You know, my mom got sick when I was around 11. She had a brain aneurysm, and she had to have brain surgery, which when she came out of the hospital, you know, she was a vegetable. She really didn't know who me and my sister was because we had a brother by then. She didn't know who we was. But we saw her recover, you know, and then become a part of the streets, you know, starting hanging out with people and using drugs, and then she started running off and leaving us. We stayed with my grandparents, which my grandfather was a pastor, so I grew up in a Baptist church. I basically grew up in church. My family comes from a long line of singing and different community choirs, so I have a history of church. But at that time in my life, I didn't want to go to church. I didn't want to be a church girl. So then I began to run away. At 12 is when I told my uncle the last time. I said, you know, no more. But by then he had taught me how to basically turn a trick. You know, you give me and I'll give you. And I got taught that real early. And that's when I began to get out there in the streets and run away, you know, with the background. I was just, it was like a magnet for me. Any kid that was in school that was the rough one, that's the ones I hung out with. And I could say after I hit about 13 is when I just really stayed out there. And that led up to a suicide attempt. My first time I tried to commit suicide, I was staying with my mother's play goddaughter. And I was dating her brother. I was 13. He was 27. And, you know, I was young, you know, cute. and I believe the scent of my father's sin on my mother was on me, which attracted, you know, perverted men. And I dated him, and I remember one night we were all getting high. I was getting high then, but I really didn't know what it was. I just did it because everybody else was doing it. They was putting powder in a cigarette, and I just did it. Didn't really know what the feeling was. And that particular night, I was asleep, and my god sister's boyfriend came in the room and told me to come out the room, and he offered me $75 to have oral sex with me. And at that point, I really didn't know what oral sex was, but all I seen was the dollar. You know, 13 years old, runaway, just lost. And I accepted his proposal, and he did it. And I went back to sleep, woke up the next day with so much guilt. I told my god sister what I did. So they began to fight. And somehow my mom was in town somewhere, and she contacted my mom and told her to come pick me up. And we're staying in Petrel Hill in San Francisco. And I went in the refrigerator and took a bottle of gin, went in the bathroom, and a whole bottle of Excedrins and aspirins, and I took them. And as I was roaming up and down the walkway waiting for my mom to come, they finally got there. And by the time I got to my aunt's house with my mother, they had to take me to the emergency. I almost died. And I went into the psych ward. They put me in a psych ward, and they evaluated me. And at that time, I was like, no, I won't do this no more, because I didn't want to stand there with those crazy people. I said, I'm not crazy. And I was able to get out. My mother and him didn't press charges against her boyfriend. He was actually like 32, I believe, at that time. And, you know, once again, I'm not protected. So my mother decided to take me to Oakland with her. And that's where the chain of reactions began. I remember first coming out to Oakland, me and my mother and my little brother, we would be staying in hotels, and she would turn tricks to pay for our room. So I remember me and my little brother a lot of times sitting in a car while she was doing what she had to do to get us a roof over our head. So that became that was normal for me. I got tired of that, and I decided to, I hooked up with a young lady who was just like me, and I began to, I just decided at that time that I didn't want to stay with my mother no more. So I decided to take to the streets of Oakland. And that's pretty much where my life just really started. Met my children's father. He was in the gang called the Mob. You know, I was this little mob chick. And, you know, we sold drugs. You know, a lot of killing was going on back in them days. But he saw me as his little dying piece that he wanted to keep in the house and protect. Because when I first came out to Oakland, I had hooked up with this girl, and she was a prostitute. And, you know, she kind of adopted me as her little sister. And but she wouldn't have me out there on the streets. But every time her guy would see me, he said, you know, she going to have to go out there too, you know. And finally, every time he saw us, her with me, he would beat her up. You know, she was like, I'm not going to let her do that. You know, she's just a baby. I think at that time I was 14. And what happened then? So one day we were in a bed, me, her, and him. He in the middle. He got on top of me, started having sex with me. And she said, you know, she called him a trick and, you know, kind of said some foul language to him and told him that she wasn't going to do that for him. And she was only doing that because she wanted to be with me, you know, because she's my little sister. And he beat her until she started having seizures. And I got away that day, decided to call my family in South San Francisco. I came back out to San Francisco because I was scared. This was a pimp. And so right. I came back home for a few months. And then, you know, the streets start calling me back. So I decided to come back out to Oakland, and that's how I met my kid's father. Me and my sister, we was like really inseparable. Her name is Kiki. I know she don't mind me saying her name. But me and her, we was kicking it one night, and I met him, and she was dating his brother. This is all in my book, too, as well. She was dating his brother, so she wanted me to date him, and I was like, nah, I can't get with him. And then I believe it was the 4th of July, I'm walking through the hallway. I was selling drugs, walking through the hallway, and the pimp held me up in a corner and told me, you know, I was going to prostitute for him. And then my children's father came through the hallway and said, no, she's not. That's my woman. He just, like, took claim on me then. And that was it. I became his little dime piece. And, you know, he locked me up in the house, told me I couldn't sell drugs no more. Then soon after that, his brother got killed. And I had got pregnant. And I came back to San Francisco. What I always do when I get scared, I run back to my grandmother's that time. And by my grandparents being pastors and stuff, they were, you know, they just had this thing about, you know, teenagers being pregnant. So they put me in a group home, in a pregnant mother's group home. So I had my first son, came back to Oakland, got with my children's father again. And this leads up to my second son. And the normal thing for him with me and him was I get pregnant, he go back to the pen. I get pregnant, he go back to the pen. So this round I was pregnant with my second son. This is when drugs got introduced into me where I started to use them and like them. And he went to jail. His sister put me out. There was a guy who was attracted to me and, you know, felt like I was with a loser. And, of course, I was faithful to him. But I was in survival mode. So I had to do what I had to do to take care of my son, my mother, and I have my little brother with me. So I cheated. I was already pregnant, though. Then he went to the when my kid's father got out, you know, he found out because I was not a liar. You know, I've always been very honest. And I admitted to him what I did. So I'm carrying a second child by him. And I'm looking at my stomach every day, not wanting my stomach because this man didn't want this baby because he said it wasn't his. And I tried to get abortion, didn't get the abortion. And so I had this baby who I unconsciously started treating like my mother treated me with rejection, you know. So we didn't have that mother-son bond when I had him. Mm-hmm. So this is the son that I had that was just murdered in May. And I didn't really notice what I was doing because I wasn't conscious of me yet. But as my children got older, I began to notice that I was treating him just like he treated me, just like my mother treated me.
Right.
So I decided to do something different because I didn't want to, you know, I had to break the chain of drugs. I skipped over a whole lot of parts, you guys, but it's going to be all, it's all going to be in the book. But the addiction, huh?
I said, that's right.
Okay.
Keep on your
journey. Well, my son, I had decided, like I said, back I guess I could say it was in the early 2000s, and he was, you know, I moved to Richmond, which is not a good area to live in. That was the biggest mistake I felt I ever made in my life, and I was real, real strict on my children, and it was like, no, I'll give you everything you need in the inside, but you can't go outside. Come home from school. We'll go out. We'll go kick it out, but I don't want you guys hanging out here. And my son would do his stuff on the way to school, on the way home. So I saw him begin to spiral out of control like I did. Of course, he was rejected. He felt like, okay, she has my older brother, he's the first child, and then she has my sister, who's the baby. So where do I fit in? So he did what he had to do to get my attention, whether it was positive or negative. And
right.
We fought because it was the side that I saw in him was a side I didn't like about myself. So I couldn't stand him half the time. But I refused to give up on him because I didn't want to do like my mother did. Remember, I keep saying that because I had this in my mind that I wasn't going to do what my mother did to me, but I was still doing it.
Right.
And so I made a decision when he was out of control. I had sent him up to a boys' ranch out in Sonoma County, which was one of the best boy ranches that you could ever be in. I mean, parents were paying $1,000 for their kids to be in there, and I'm paying $20. You know, so I had the favor of the Lord on me. You know, my son, you know, he was good in basketball, and, you know, he had a big opportunity there, but he wasn't ready for it. So he got kicked out of that. And I used to watch the Judge Hatchett show. So one day I'm on the internet, and I said, you know, I'm going to write them because, I just want to see if this is real. And I think like a month later, they called me, and they wanted me to come be on their show. So I'm saying, okay, now they're going to put him in one of these real hard penitentiaries and scare him. So we get up there. We go. And we went to New York. We stayed out there for like a week. They flew us to Miami, and they had my son meet with Alonzo Mourning, the NBA player. And so that kind of, I don't know, it triggered something in him, made him think he was even badder because he's on TV, he playing with the NBA player. The NBA player told him he going to do all this and that with him. So when he came back home, he was the man. So he got worse. So I had opened up a daycare, and I decided to stop working because I would get called. I would have to always go get him from school. You know, he's fighting or doing something. So I decided to go pick him up, stop working and open up a daycare so I can be home. And I closed my daycare down, gave my parents notice, and I moved out to East County of Contra Costa. And that didn't work. So I ended up, because I had the daycare, I ended up putting my son out really early. I think he was like maybe seven, or he had just made 17, and he just couldn't stay with me anymore because I had people's kids that I had trust. You know, they trusted me with their children, and I just couldn't have that lifestyle, you know, this little wild kid. So I put him out. So I put him in juvenile a few times, try to get him home. Come in the house, disrespectful, put him out, and then finally I just put him out. And he did some time in Susanville Penitentiary. I think he did like 18 months, 3 years, something like that. But he was in and out for a while. And I lost him at the age of 23. So let's see, I guess around 2006, I decided to free him. So I told him about me. I told him about the way I had him, how I felt when I had him. I said I was young. You know, I was a baby. By the time I was 21, I had 3 kids. You know what I'm saying? I didn't have any parenting. The streets raised me. So I did the best that I knew to do. But this is what I want to do for you because I don't want you to feel like I felt. So I decided to just tell him the truth about everything. And he was hurt. He cried. He was mad at his father. And I believe at that point I kind of freed him from, oh, okay, now I understand why my mom was like this with me. So I had to do it a few more times. And last year, December, because he would always throw in my face, well, you treat me different than you treated them. And I said, you know what, I have apologized to you, son. I have apologized. Mama don't know what else to do. But I can't let you keep me there. Because if you can't forgive me, you either need to go get some therapy or you're going to have to stay away from me because I'm healing. And I think that light woke him up. And right then I began to see him. His girlfriend was pregnant with his son. And I began to see him start changing. You know, I just began to see his, you know, Mama, I'm about to have a baby. I can't do the streets no more. I can't do the streets no more, Mama. And we just saw him just change. And I had joined this book project called Stories of Transformation. My chapter in the book was called From Bondage to Beauty. And I was actually, that book was due to be, our book release was on May the 29th. And I had a monologue done on May the 7th. It was called the Imagine Me Gospel Concert, where Tommy Ford, who played in Martin Lawrence, on the Martin Lawrence show, he played the lead act in that. And my son was trying to get there. He didn't make it there. That was a week before his murder. And
right.
So he was happy. He called me up. He's like, "Mom, I'm working. I got a job. I ain't doing these streets no more." And I told him, I said, "I'm proud of you." And he said, "Are you really proud of me?" I said, "Yeah, I'm proud of you. Yeah, I'm proud of you." And he said, "I'm proud of you too." So he was excited going around telling people, "They're going to do movies about my mama's book, about her life. They're going to do movies." And he was just really excited trying to get there. He didn't get there. He called me on Mother's Day, which is, I think, the 8th of May. And he said, "Mom, I'm sorry I didn't make it, but I love you. Happy Mother's Day." And pretty much that's the last time I spoke with him. And then on,
deep breath. You know, it was an important healing point in both of your lives, you know, what you went through and what he went through. And for you to know that you were able to share your life with him and he was able to finally accept it and move on, you know, with that understanding of why things were the way they were. And his father was in and out of the penitentiary all the time, so he didn't really have a great father figure from what I understanding and from what you've told me already.
I believe the blessing in that, there was even a blessing in that, because 2 months before he was killed, his father got out of the pen. He had been in there for 13 plus years. So I was happy that he was able to even get to spend, you know, because I had him all his life, you know, single
right.
parent, raising three kids by myself, you know, never got
right.
a child support check. But I did the best I could. But I was happy for his father that he was able to spend that time, the little bit of time that he did, you know, before he was murdered.
It seemed like the last few months were the greatest healing of his life anyways.
Yeah, his son was born.
His turning point, right.
Mm-hmm. His son was born. He was a daddy. Got a new job. His first job. Not a new job, but his first job. And I remember the night I was on the phone talking to one of the co-authors that I was in that book project with. And the phone kept ringing. And I said, that's my son. I'm not answering that. I don't know why. I was like, I'm not answering. And it just kept ringing and ringing and ringing. So I was like, I'm not answering it. And so she finally said, "Stephanie, answer that phone." I said, "I'm scared. Now I'm scared." And so I walked in the house. And I answered the phone, and all I could hear was screaming. I couldn't understand anything that his girlfriend was saying. I heard her say, "Gone." I didn't know what she was talking about. All I remember is I hit the floor, and I screamed. I didn't know why I was screaming. We kind of walked around the house because couldn't nobody make any sense out of what she was saying. Threw our clothes on, got in the car. We didn't know where we were going. We was on our way to Richmond. And I finally got her on the phone to talk, and she told me, and I just lost it in the car. And it was the worst thing I could ever feel, because we didn't know where we were going. We didn't know, you know, I didn't want to go over where they said it was, because I could not see my son out there like that. And finally, we got a hold to the detective, and he had us meet him back out our way. And we went in there and we identified him by photo. And he just looked asleep. No, his eyes was open.
Right.
So I wanted to see my baby. I said, I want to see him. They didn't let me see him. It happened on that Thursday. I didn't get to see him till that Monday at the mortuary. And when I went to see him, he just looked like he was asleep. And I held him. And me, I'm afraid of dead people. I don't do too much kissing or touching. I've always been petrified. But my son, it was like I didn't see none of that.
Right.
And I'm holding my child, you know, and I'm holding him and just rubbing him and just kissing him and just rubbing him and kissing him. And his father had noticed that I had my hand in a pool of blood. And all I know is I woke up later because I passed out, and they rushed and got him out there. And this is, you know, it's he lit a torch under me because I was already, we both were in our transformation at the same time, both of us,
right,
healing. And I believe that his death has really caused me to go even farther. I mean, and I'm so busy now, and I'm looking at just reality of everything going on around me, and I look at myself sometimes as this little girl, this little nothing girl, but people see value in me.
Right.
And now I have to look at myself and see value in me. And I know that I'm an inspiration to others.
You
and
are.
It just keeps me going. It just keeps me going.
Let me just make the point, too, though, that at this time your son's 22, 23 years old. He's finally out of the streets. He's got a job. He's got a baby, got a girl, trying to do the right thing, and he's at the wrong place at the wrong time because it was a drive-by shooting. Four people were shot, I think three homicides.
Yes.
Is that correct? Right.
Yes, it was a triple homicide.
So, you know, once he finally did get out of that life, it was just, you know, he was at the wrong place at the wrong time.
Yeah, and, you know, that night, you know, because you could hear the ignorance of family members and stuff, you know, and I'm like, you know what? I don't have nothing against those dudes. I really don't, because my son was them. He was them not too long before that. These kids are these kids are sick. These kids need help. You know, these kids don't even realize, they don't even care about living, you know, and that's my whole point. It's like, you know, people, the streets want to fight back. They want revenge and all that, but all you're going to get is a bunch of grieving mothers and grieving families and grieving fathers because they have all of the guys in custody now, and I'm just waiting to go to court. And it ain't just my, it's not just the three families. It's eight families that these boys have affected. These
right.
kids are lost. They're just doing it. They're just going out there just doing it for nothing. So.
No purpose at all. Stephanie, we're going to take just a quick commercial break, let you catch your breath, and we're going to come back and we're going to answer a couple of callers. And if there's any buddy that you know wants to call in, the number's 347-826-7273. If you're listening online and want to type in a question in our chat box, you can do that as well. But we're going to just take this quick commercial and then we will be right back.
The first time I did meth, I was with my best friend and his mom. I had no idea what it was going to actually end up doing to my life. My name is Russell. I'm 19 years old. I started doing meth when I was 14. I've started at least three people that I know on meth, and where they're at right now, they're probably either in jail or I know one's dead. I went from a pretty good student to a dropout. I've ruined relationships. I've stolen from people. My family, I physically abused them. I mean, the list just goes on. I've wasted a lot of time. I've gone from a person who had enormous potential to a person that had absolutely no potential because I chose to pick a little white rock over everything else.
Brought to you by the Arizona Meth Project.
Yes, thank you all, and welcome back to the Streets Don't Love You Back radio show. And we're going to take a caller right now. Caller, you're in the air.
Would that be me? Good evening,
yes,
Rob.
Is that Miss Karen?
It's Miss Karen.
Hey, how you doing, young lady?
I'm good. Good evening.
Oh, you know, we're so glad to have you back on the show and listening in to the young lady. And you also can share her pain as well. So
yes.
Would you like to ask her a question tonight, Miss Karen?
I do. I want to say to Miss Stephanie, first of all, that I am
so sorry to hear about the tragedy to her son. I know it wasn't too long ago, very fresh in your mind and in your heart. What I would like to say to Stephanie is that, believe it or not, the pain is manageable. It is tough. I'm not trying to minimize anything about the grief process at all, but I just wanted to say to her, I'm over a little over 3 years into dealing with the loss of my son back 3 years ago, June 11th, 2007. So that was the first thing that I wanted to get out of the way, that I'm so sorry to hear about another death to one of our young men out here in these streets. And I have to totally agree with her that it just seems that it just does not stop. I'm listening to her story from the very beginning, and I was taking some notes. And I think what I wanted to ask her about is the abuse that she endured, the sexual abuse by her uncle and other men, but more in particular about the uncle. I wanted to know, Stephanie, did you ever talk about it with your mother, and did you ever confront your uncle, and what is his reaction and response, and do you have a relationship with him currently?
Okay, that's real easy. I did mention that I began my crack addiction around 17, and me and my mother got high together.
Oh.
And I prostituted my body to get her drugs because I didn't want her tweaking. I didn't want her, you know, going out there doing something. And so I sacrificed myself. That's how much I loved her. And one day we was getting high, and I just said it. I just said, you know, I remember when Uncle Albert used to, you know, do this to me. And she, you know, I didn't get no reaction from her. So that was that for a long time. And then finally, when I actually received Christ in my life, I was at a church, which was a deliverance ministry. And that's when I began to walk in my deliverance. And I wanted to start attacking some things. I wanted to find out who my father was. I wanted to, you know, I wanted to confront stuff. And I would go over to my family's house, Christmas, you know, Easter. And every time I would go over there, he would grab my titties on my behind. And I just got tired of it. So I called my grandmother one day, and I told her. And she said, well, why are you telling me now? And I said, because I'm tired of coming over there. And then you guys think I'm crazy when I clench up in my little closet and just kind of don't talk to nobody. Everybody think I have an attitude. This is why. And that's when my family found out. And then my grandfather passed away in 2002. And he came to me, and he said, you know, niece, I'm sorry, you know, for what I did to you. And I had been forgiven him by then. And I just told him, I said, you don't realize what you created in me when you did that to me. But I forgive you. And I believe a few years ago he came to me again because, you know, it was all out then. Everybody knows. And he said, you know, I'm tired of feeling like a pervert. You know, and I told him, I said, like I told you before, I've forgiven you. But what I choose to do today is I choose to stay away. I don't even really go around my family because I've been fighting to heal for the last years. And for me, it's safe for me to not go around all of the dysfunction. So I'm pretty much my children and my husband, my present husband now, this is all I have. So that's how I protect myself now.
With all that you mentioned, the substance abuse and all, did you, and as well as for even for the physical abuse, were you ever or have you had any intensive individual therapy?
Now I am.
You do now. Okay.
When I started writing my book, I started writing my book back in 2002, but every time I would get into an area that was painful, I would stop. And then, this opportunity opened up for me to do this book with these 13 other women, and so I decided. Then all of the bandages came off, and I was suicidal. So in my mind, you know, not that I would do it, but I said I need help. I gotta go do something. So I began to start therapy, and I do that weekly now. So it's never too late to begin your healing, because
I existed
for 41 years, just not living, just existing, in survival mode. So go ahead.
I'm so sorry. I'm so anxious to ask you, what's the name of your book?
Oh, okay. The book that I did with the 13 women, it's called Storms of Transformation. This book is already published, and my chapter in that is From Bondage to Beauty. And the really trip about this book is my chapter is 13, and my son was murdered on May the 13th. So all of the feedback on that chapter, you know, everybody's like, we want more, because it was only so much you can do when you're sharing a book, when you're doing a chapter with all the women. So it just really forced me to finish my book, and my book is called Uncovered, not covered by man, but covered by the blood of Jesus.
Now, did you say Storms of Transformation?
Stories of Transformation.
Stories. Can I get this on Amazon? I'm on Amazon right now looking for it.
You can actually go to Gigi's Lifestyle, to my website, and I still have a few books left, and you can purchase it from me if you're interested.
Gigi's Lifestyle.
And it's ggslifestyle.com.
Okay, great.
And that book is pretty powerful. If you guys would like, I can read you a paragraph of that.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, go ahead, young lady.
Okay. Let's see. I'll do a paragraph. Okay. From Bondage to Beauty. I didn't understand where the anger was coming from as the knock on the door grew louder and louder, or why this man lying next to me appeared to be more afraid than I was. I tried to interpretate the scene, but nothing was making any sense. Maybe it was the fact that I was 17, or maybe it was the fact that I had become so numb emotionally that insane became normal and normal became insane. I know now that when we pursue love from someone who is emotionally, spiritually, or mentally in bondage, we become emotionally, mentally, and spiritually corrupt. Feeling naked and ashamed, I slowly pulled myself up that night as I began getting dressed. My mother, my partner in crime, pushed her way into the room shouting, "Where's my money?" She wasn't actually talking to me. She was talking to the mister, the man she traded me for, the man that took pleasure in exchanging sex with the child so that mama could afford to get high. I'll stop right there.
Okay.
Exactly.
Wow.
That's a powerful, powerful statement right there. And I would just like to say that I hope our young listeners is paying attention to that as well. Because, like I say all the time, you have a lot of parents out here try to look the other way, like little Johnny or little Susie is not doing nothing wrong. But that is the problem of today. We turn a blind eye to reality, and we let our kids slip off into darkness, which is the streets. And then when the streets raise them, then you look around and ask yourself, what did I go wrong? You went wrong by turning a blind eye. So we definitely hope you're listening to Ms. Stephanie tonight and her message. And like I tell people, no matter what your testimony is, at the end of the day, if you've been in that street life, at the end of the day, you're going to say that one word that I always use, and that is, the streets don't love you back.
That's right. Amen.
Carry on, ladies.
You have anything else for me?
Those were all the questions that I had written down. Actually, a couple of them you had answered about your son. I was wondering, was there a conviction? You said you were waiting to go to court, right?
Yeah, I'm waiting. I'm waiting now.
How old was your son?
He was 23. And, 23. You know, the awesome part about it was the detective, he told me, he said, "I know your son wasn't gangbanging anymore." And he said, "He will not be a statistic, and you will be the first parent I call when it's time to go into court." So I really feel honored by the police department, because, you know, a lot of times we're not happy with them. But the way that they treated me with the situation with my son, because they don't know who they murdered. They murdered my son. I don't know about the other parents, but I'm a child of God. And they touched the wrong one. That's why they all got caught.
Right.
We don't get this success story all the time because just because they got caught with my son, now those other parents who didn't know who killed their son, now they're have a peace of mind of knowing who murdered their son. So
that
is good.
And another thing I want to touch upon too, Stephanie and Ms. Karen, I would like to, if it's all right with you, Ms. Karen, we would like to pass your number on to Ms. Stephanie because I feel you all can be a big help to each other due to the fact that you both know what it is to lose a loved one, and not just a loved one. You both know what it is to lose a son, a child.
Yes.
Yes.
To violence. Yes.
Yes.
So would that be all right with you, Ms. Karen?
That would be absolutely fine with me. Thank you, Rob.
Okay. So we'll definitely give you Ms. Karen number offline, Ms. Stephanie, when we get off the air tonight. And like I said, you know, we must embrace each other, you know, and each one teach one. And you know, this is a global thing. I tell people all the time, this is not just in the ghetto thing. This is a global thing. It's all over, suburbs, downhill, uphill, around here. And we must take our neighborhoods back, you know. We must stand up for what's right, you know, and we must not allow the drug dealer, the thug, to hang on our corners where we are afraid to go into the store to buy groceries. We must stand up in our neighborhoods. And this is what I say every time I speak at the schools and when I speak to these young folks and the older folks as well. We must stand up because how can you let a drug dealer and a thug say he owned your neighborhood, and if you done bought your house, where is his name at on the deed? You don't hear me, sister. Where's his name at on the deed?
Right.
Now, if the deed say your name slash drug dealer slash thug, well, then he own a part of that house. But long as his name don't say on the deed drug dealer slash thug, we need to get these knuckleheads up out of our neighborhood. Do we agree or disagree?
We agree.
And, you know, it's really awesome that you're saying that right now because next week I will be going into the YA Youth Authority to speak to hundreds of kids. And my nonprofit, Gigi's Lifestyle, is a resource center. And I heard Judge Mathis say the other day, he said, if we don't get these kids in the first 48 hours before they get out of prison, they're going back. And what I want to offer to my community and even worldwide, if any resources can help them, is here's some resources to some counseling, you know, from counseling to shelters to rehabilitation centers to anything that you need for better living is on my site. And that's
give
what
them your website, Ms. Stephanie. Give them that website again.
It's www.ggs. That's God F Stephanie lifestyle.com. And we'll also be throwing events for the youth. I'm doing a conference for mothers who have lost their mothers and fathers, because it's not just mothers, who have lost their children to violence. I'll be doing that in the early part of next year. So I've some good stuff coming forth, because my son's name will not be in vain. His death won't be in vain, and I know yours won't either.
No, it hasn't been. And it's my mother's not in vain.
At all.
Karen,
I also wrote a book, too.
Yeah, Miss Karen definitely wrote for hers, too. You feel me? Yeah, ain't nothing with the good sister, you dig? And while we're on the air, Miss Karen, you can let Miss Stephanie know about your book as well, and just a brief little thing about Courtney, you know, since both of you all are going to be on one accord with helping each other out, you know, on the strength and communicating and talking, since you both, you know what that feels like to lose a child.
Yes, of course. Yes, as I indicated earlier, Courtney was killed June 11th, 2007. He was 22 years old, about a month away from his 23rd birthday. And as a result,
then I put together the book. My book is called Life Interrupted in the Aftermath of My Son's Murder. It is available on Amazon.com, Borders, Barnes & Noble.
Okay.
It was not my original intent to write a book. I didn't set out to do that, but I had been keeping a journal about a month after he was killed just because, I don't know, I had this beautiful dream about him, and that's just what I decided to do, and it grew from there. It kind of took on a life of its own.
Okay.
So the book was released earlier this year, Valentine's Day weekend.
Okay.
The book was released, and it seems to be doing pretty good still. The guy who killed Courtney, he remained in fugitive status for about close to 2 months, and he was apprehended on August 4th, 2007, and he is now serving natural life in the prison system here in Michigan, life without the possibility of parole. He was convicted of first-degree premeditated murder, and unfortunately, in his fugitive status, he was, I guess, desperate, and there's certainly no justification for any of his actions, but he killed another young man while on the run.
Wow.
And so there's another young man who lost his life in July of 2007 because this guy is desperate for money, and, you know, he's trying to lay low, but he was apprehended, and that's just pretty much what it is. Courtney was my firstborn son.
Okay.
And I have two other children. I have a daughter. She's now 23 years old. She was just married back in July. And I have my youngest boy, and he's 16.
Okay.
So, yeah, so I do things in the community here in the metropolitan Detroit area as well. And I try to, I seem to be a little bit more geared towards, I guess you might want to say, not that I'm, I actually, my day job is actually in juvenile justice. And so that's just kind of ironic. Anyway, or feels ironic to me, but my primary concern, or where I seem to be more, or where I gravitate more towards, is to assisting parents of murdered children. That's really where my heart and my desire seem to be the strongest. So that's really what I go toward. I try to go towards, and I certainly accept speaking engagements and things like this for at-risk youth and just at-risk. Men and women in general. I would certainly do that just so they can hear the other side of the story. However, my heart is with other families like mine, because my other motto, more than not in vain, is that murder is never just between two people, because it is not. It is such a huge fallout. There's so many other factors and so many other people involved. You know, when my daughter was married in July, you know, I've got to walk in with a single rose, you know, to honor Courtney. She walks halfway down the aisle by herself to honor her brother, you know, his pictures and her bouquet and this kind of thing before her dad takes hold of her because they were so close. So it's very heartbreaking, and it reaches a lot deeper than just, you know, between those two people. So whenever I have the opportunity, I try to say that to any of the young men that think that it's okay to kill somebody and that it's just a sport, so to speak, is that it's a lot more complicated than what you can ever imagine, and then you actually, you know, you devastate your own life and your own parents and your own family as well. They're all affected, because if they love you, they're going to do that time with you, and it's not an easy thing. So, yeah, but I spent a lot of time last night, about 4 hours, in counseling with a woman who lost a son here in Michigan. Seems to be a hate crime, a hate murder. 19-year-old young man, there is no justice in this case. It happened a little over a year ago. Seems that he was hit in the head multiple times and drowned. He just left for college, only gone away from home for a week.
Wow.
And so this is a parent who is incredibly devastated and angry at everyone, because she's not getting any justice right now, and she's getting no cooperation. She's hired Jeffrey Figer, and but still, and she's contacted, you know, my thing was, okay, well, then let's go to the NAACP, I'm sorry, and, you know, let's get some attention brought to this case. And turns out she's already tried those things. So I spent an awful lot of time, of my personal time, either chatting online or talking on the phone with other parents of murdered children. That just seems to be where my heart is, trying to bring comfort and hope. Not that, of course, that it isn't important to educate and to hopefully to turn the ones around that we can grab because we know we won't get them all. But, you know, still at the end of the day, I know what my heart is, where it's been from the very beginning since the tragedy, you know, knocked on my front door. So, but I certainly look forward to, you know, talking further with Miss Stephanie and finding out more about her conference that's going to be coming up next year. And, you know, and where it's going to be held and all the details. And if it's out in, you live in California, Stephanie?
Yes, I do.
Okay, yeah, I've never been to California. So that would be a great excuse.
It's time to come to Cali.
Yes, it is. I'd be like, hey, I have a conference. I have to go.
Okay.
So I look forward to finding out more about, you know, what you've got going on with that Mother's Conference, Parents Conference of Murdered Children. That'd be so awesome, I'm sure.
And, you know, my heart is not only designated for this, but just hurting people, hurting kids, because I was them. You know, I happened to skip a lot of that penitentiary stuff. I didn't, God preserved me from all of that. You know, he preserved me from getting AIDS and all of that, because why I didn't get all of that. But my heart really goes out for hurting people, because I've noticed through my writing it has opened up stuff inside of people, older people. I get older people leaving comments on my website that said, wow, I thought I was healed from this stuff, but this just opened up something for me. So my heart, my nonprofit is bigger than me, because my heart is so, my passion for it is so big for hurting people, just period, hurting people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and
do you have two books?
No. I'm working on, I'm finishing my second book, because I had one of these big agencies already hit me up, so they're waiting for the finished product for my manuscript, and I'm being nominated for Diamonds and Pearls in December, and that's a women's organization out here, and the chief editor of Essence Magazine is going to be there, so I was, you know, I want to hand my book, you know, so just a lot of good things are happening. God is opening up doors, and I'm just walking, you know.
Yeah, praise God. Praise God. Well, I enjoyed the conversation. I'm so sorry that I do have to hang up. I have a funeral early in the morning.
Okay. It was nice.
But
thank you for calling in, Karen. We appreciate hearing from you again.
Yes. Yes, Lucinda and Rob, thank you so much for letting me know. I'm so happy to have had the opportunity, and I'm glad I stayed up so that I could at least listen to some of her story a while. Just, it's tragic, but you are definitely doing something positive with all of the negative things that have happened to you, and I just want to say God bless you, and you keep going, sister, and I look forward to speaking with you again in the very near future, and Rob and Lucinda will get you my contact information, and I'm so sure that we'll be connecting real soon.
Okay. Look forward to
it. Okay. You guys have
Thanks.
A great night.
Have a good night.
Okay, good night. Bye-bye.
Bye. Stephanie.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, Karen is a good lady to hook up with as well, so we'll definitely give you that information when we're offline. Going back, what did you tell, first of all, I can't remember if we talked about this or not before when we talked, but when your mom was pregnant with you because she was raped, did she consider abortion?
Well, I was told, you know, I was told so many stories as I got older. I was told that she was about to give me up for adoption, and her pastor at that time came into the hospital and told her, no, you're not going to give her away. You know, no, you're not going to give your baby away. But I know that was an option for her. And I remember her telling me that, because I had to ask her to get clarification on it, because I'm writing it in my book, that I had almost died. And what happened, she told me, she said, I fell on the floor, and she yanked me. I guess I fell on the floor and kind of rolled under the bed, and she yanked me by my arm really hard, which caused me to lose my breath. And screamed for my auntie. She didn't know what to do, so she didn't do nothing. So I guess I was choking. And my aunt came in the room and, you know, hit me, did whatever she did to me, and I can't get the word.
Frustrated.
But she helped me to get my breath back, and she like threw me on my mother and said, "This is your baby," you know. And my mom said at that moment she grabbed me and said, "You know, this is my child," but you know. She said it, but she still didn't. She still couldn't really mentally accept me.
Right.
So, and now, when I was about 25, like I told you, I began to look for my father, and I found out who he was. Got in that ministry, and I said I wanted to know who the missing piece of me was. So I found him. We actually have a relationship now. He's in the federal penitentiary. He's been in there for 20 years. And, you know, found out who I'm like. Because I was a monster when I was out there. A monster but sweet. And I'm pretty much a...
You're a monster only because of life circumstances, not because you were born monster.
Yeah, I had to learn how to protect myself real early. You know, so a lot of men had to pay for it after...
Right.
They had to pay for it, you know, and I'm still.
What advice could you give kids that may be in that same kind of situation where they're not feeling a closeness with their parent, or they just have one parent and they're just feeling, you know, that disconnection?
What I can tell them is tell your mom how you feel. I didn't know to do that. I just reacted, you know, so. What I see a lot of kids doing is they just have this behavior because they're afraid of being rejected if they say something. Tell somebody. Tell your mother how you feel. You know, tell her I need you. Tell her I can't live without you. I can't make it without you. I wish I could have told my mother that because it may have clicked something in her head then. But I didn't have the ability to do that then. But to a child now, young, they old enough to talk to somebody. You know, if you can't talk to your mother, tell somebody. If somebody's molesting you, somebody's doing something to you, tell somebody. I don't care if they threaten you, you tell somebody because they're not going to do nothing to you. Just pumping fear in you.
Right. And what can you tell the young teenage girls that are out prostituting themselves, trying to take care of themselves on the street because of whatever circumstance?
Ask for help because there's plenty of resources. Ask for help. And you have to learn how to look in the mirror at yourself and see some value in yourself, you know, because
right.
I know I didn't see any value in myself. And had I knew the wisdom that I have now, I would have looked in the mirror and saw something good about myself and reached out for help, you know. But you got to want help. You got to
right.
want help. And you just deserve so much better.
And that's for sure. There's a lot of help. And, you know, a lot of girls are runaways and just, you know, don't want to follow the rules. But there's a lot of circumstances, too, that you know, girls may have been abused and not been able to tell anybody or don't know that they can trust somebody or don't know who to go to because they've never been told you can talk to somebody.
And I want to share this, too, because I remember my grandmother, when I first ran away, put me in therapy. And she put me in group therapy with girls like me. And when I began to tell her how I felt, she said they were brainwashing me. And she pulled me out. Listen to your kids, parents, because when they're acting out, they're asking for something. Listen to them. Watch them. Watch their rebellion. Watch their behavior. Watch their body language. They're crying out. You know, listen, parents, don't be afraid to have to look at yourself and admit that maybe you made some mistakes, and that's a big problem because a lot of parents don't want to admit, okay, I did the best I can. I wasn't the greatest mother, but I did the best I can, and be okay with that. Be
right.
okay with that.
Well,
you may have made some mistakes. It's okay.
We didn't get directions with the babies telling us how to take care of them, how to be the best mom, how to do this and that. We just did what we were taught, and maybe we weren't taught the right things from our parents, or maybe they weren't taught the right things from their parents, you know. So, you know, we all have our own ups and downs, and we all have our own trials as we try to become parents, you know, and it's not easy.
I had my older son tell me last night, and it kind of hurt my feelings, but I had to swallow that up because
while I had my son, who I had to give a lot of my attention to, and then I had my daughter, which was my girl I always wanted, you know, and I'm giving all this attention to the wayward son, the older son felt like he was being ignored. And I'm saying, wait a minute, I didn't have any problems with you. So, but he was still missing something. That's still affecting him today. He's 25 years old today.
Everything seemed to be okay, but it still wasn't. He still wasn't getting your attention that he needed.
Still wasn't getting my attention. So,
right.
We gotta listen to our children. We gotta watch
our children. Yeah, you know, we have to let our children know. Our children know too that no matter, you know, what circumstances they go through in life, you know, they're worth something. You know, they're children of God, and there's always people that are going to be there to help them.
Yep. Yes.
So, I am going to hand the mic over to Boyd for just a minute.
Yes, Ms. Stephanie. I just want to say I definitely appreciate you coming on the air and definitely sharing your story with everyone. And we definitely hope that our viewers and listeners definitely took heed to what the message was, and that there are plenty of resources that they can reach out to if you're out there on the streets or you just need someone to talk to or communicate to. And we would like for you to give your website out one more time.
Okay. It's www.ggsstephanielifestyle.com, and lifestyle is lifestyle.com. Check us out. We got plenty of resources on there. We're still filling them up daily.
All right. And we just want you to, if there anybody you would like to give a shout out to and say your last piece and message to.
Well, just basically, love everybody, and thank everybody who's on this line listening, and on the internet listening. Thank you for your support. And the book will be coming out, so be listening out for Uncovered in the next month. In the next month or two, I will be releasing the book. Haven't really decided what I'm going to do for my release. But that's coming up Monday. For people who are listening out in California, I will be doing a book release party for Judge Hatchett. She's an advocate for the children. She impacted my son's life. And go to her website and go to her page on Facebook and like her page and support her with this book, because she's fighting for us as parents. Definitely go to Judge Hatchett's website and see what she's doing for the kids. Pretty powerful.
Right. Give them Judge Hatchett's website and Facebook.
Okay. Woo. Give me 1 second. Audience.
I'll take your time.
Okay, when you go to Facebook, you just type in Judge Glenda Hatchett, and that's her like page. She has a few pages that will pull up, but her like page is the page that you can join, because her other page, no one can join that one. But it's going to pull up at least two pages for her. And her website, let me give you her website. It's called Parent Power Now. She has, I believe, weekly meetings with parents, and I know she did something with the youth before school started back. She's hands-on with people, so you guys definitely want to get her book. Her book is called Dare to Take Charge. If you go to Gigi's Lifestyle, you'll see her link on my site, and you can go to her website from my site, too, as well. So,
great.
And Parent Power Now is called www.parentpowernow.com. She has a social site on there. Join her social site and just start watching what she's doing. She's
She's coming. She'll be speaking in different cities. Her book releases on the 20th. She'll be doing different book release parties. People are doing book release parties for her simultaneously that day. I'm doing one for California. People all over the world are doing them. So I know Michigan. I know they're everywhere. So if you go to her site, you can see where her host parties are being done at. And go on and join in.
We definitely thank you for that, you know. And I'm going to pass the phone back to my missus, and she got a few announcements to make of a few events that's coming up with The Streets Don't Love You Back. And then we're going to go ahead and turn it back over to you, Miss Stephanie, and let you do your last closeouts. And I'll turn it back over to the missus to give the updates to the fans.
And thank you.
All right. We just want everyone to know that Rob will be speaking at Cortez High School on September 22nd. That's in Phoenix, Arizona. And he has a book signing at Bookman's. At Bookman's Entertainment Exchange. That's in Mesa, Arizona. That's 1056. South Country Club in Mesa, Arizona, and that's Saturday, September 18th from 2 to 4. So you can come on down there and get your book and get your autograph and also pick up a cap and a T-shirt and our soundtrack. We'll have everything there with us. And then we're looking forward to speaking at Independence High School on September 29th. And then also we're speaking at the Maricopa Youth Recreation Center in Maricopa, Arizona, on September 22nd in the evening from 6 to 7 p.m. We would just like everyone to log on to our website and join our movement. The website is www.thestreetsdontloveyouback.com. And you can see Stephanie has a profile page there that she puts her information on as well. So if you log on to our site, you can find her information as well. We would just like to thank everybody for listening in tonight, and remember, join us every Wednesday night right here on thestreetsdontloveyouback.com. You can connect to the radio show there. You can listen to any of our past shows 24/7 from our website as well. Hold on.
Yes, and last but not least, we would like to give a big shout out to the in Maricopa newspaper for definitely supporting the movement and everything. And we would also like to give a shout out to the Monitor, Maricopa Monitor newspaper for being behind us and supporting us as well. And we also would like everybody in Arizona and across America to be watching out for our upcoming boxer that we manage right now. We're managing the marvelous Marvin Hagler nephew, which is Marcus Hagler, and he's fighting in the middleweight division, and me and my missus is his manager. So definitely be on the lookout for the next Hagler coming out, you know. So we want to just tell all the youths, if you are interested in just going to a gym or getting into boxing or anything like that, log on to our website at www.thestreetsdontloveyouback.com, and you can go up at the top of our page that say boxing, and you can click on that and get some information as well about the gym. And I would like to give a shout out to my wife's uncle, Mr. Al Finn, who started the gym in 1965, who passed at 93 years old, and the gym still remains today. And now his daughter, Kelly Finn, my wife's cousin, takes over that right now. So the movement and the dream still lives. And be on the lookout for the Copper Gloves. That will be taking place October the 21st and the 22nd right here in Arizona at the State Fairgrounds. So you can also log and get that information off our website as well. So we want to thank everyone for a great, great night. We want to thank Ms. Stephanie for coming on and sharing her story. And we just thanking everyone for always tuning in and have their listening ear out. And like we always say, each one, teach one. And here go the misses, and God bless, and have a great night, everybody.
Stephanie, we just want to give you one last chance to give your shout-out to anyone, and then also just go ahead and repeat your website one more time.
Okay. I would like to give a shout-out to my husband, Reginald Guillory, Omari, my oldest, my baby, Britannia, my grandbaby, both of my juniors, Jahan and Omari. I love you, love you, love you. And my website, once again, is www.ggslifestyle.com. I'm Resource Center, so come check us out and see what we're doing out here in the Bay Area. Love you all. Thank you, Lucina and Rob. Thank you for having me.
So, Steph, hold on. Rob has another question.
Yes, Ms. Steph, we have a guest in our chat room, and the chat name is Ready to Lead. And the question to you is, Pastor Stephanie, how has your transformation strengthened you and your family?
Oh, it has just strengthened us. I can't even say how much it strengthened us, because we just basically came through a Job experience where we lost everything, including our son. And I tell you, we're actually watching God just work miracles now, restoring us and giving us back a double for our trouble. So we just empowered now, and we're close, and we're strong, and we're going to keep going. And you're going to hear from us.
Amen. And we would just like for you to, this guest just came online, Ms. Stephanie, so if you would like to give Ready to Lead the website and let them know they can also log on to learn more about your movement as well.
Okay. The website again?
Yes, your website.
www.ggsstephanielifestyle, L-I-F. STYLE.com. Gigi's Life.
Right.
Gigi's Lifestyle.
And we would just like to thank once again everyone for listening in. And we would just like to thank Ready to Lead for that question. And you can also log on to the website tonight to listen to the full interview with Ms. Stephanie at www.thestreetsdontloveyouback.com, and there you can listen to the whole interview. And once again, we would like to thank you for coming on, Ms. Steph, and much love to you and your family, and give a big shout out to your husband. And we would just like to thank you both for constantly staying on the journey and constantly keep putting God first, because he is the one, the only one. He's the answer. He's the Alpha and Omega.
Amen.
Beginning and the end. So we would just like to thank everyone. And like we always say, the streets don't love you back. And spread the love and spread the message to our youths around the world. And now we will go out with a song called Guide and Protectors. And we can listen to that. And then you can hang up after the song go off and stuff.
Okay.
Have a great night, too.
You too.
Guide and protect us, Lord. Give us your grace and your strength and your mercy. Swinging that two-edged sword. I'm fighting for justice, so nothing can hurt me. Even when I pass away, my legacy lives on through my seed and my working. Every little thing I pray. Give thanks for your grace and your strength and your mercy, your mercy. The first one I call every day when I wake and pray. Yeah, the one who is there when no one has a care, I say. Lord, you strengthen my soul when my mind wants to go astray. Yeah, and lift me up high when I fall and my ground gives way. Lord, how precious your love and your grace and your countenance. Lord, you show me the light and the dark, now I shall be there. till they don't exist. Guide and protect us, Lord. To give us your grace and your strength and your mercy. Swinging the two-edged sword. I'm fighting for justice so nothing can hurt me. Even when I pass away, my legacy lives on through my seed and my working. Every little thing I pray. Give thanks to your grace and your strength and your mercy, your mercy. When enemies close all around, I will call your name, yeah. And slaughter the weak, you quickly with no thought or shame, Lord. For my heart is firm in your hands, so I'm no disgrace, no. I'll hail up your name every day with a smiling face, boy. I never can give enough praise to your tenderness, Lord. To be in your infinite grace is my happiness, yeah. No matter the time or the place, you're a devotion, Lord. You show me the light and the dark, so I carry it. Guide and protect us, Lord. Give us your grace and your strength and your mercy. Swinging the two-edged sword. I'm fighting for justice so nothing can hurt me. Even when I pass away, my legacy lives on through my seed and my working. Every little thing I pray. Give thanks to your grace and your strength and your mercy, your mercy. Yeah, we trod the long rocky road. The buffalo soldier fights the power freedom war. The last step on the throne. The conquering disciples burn your congregation. Yeah, yeah. Collect your security. We build a better nation. Time beside the unity. Say nothing in fight, nothing in war. But brotherly love can destroy oppression. If we come together, we can conquer all our foes. Live victory eternally. But if we keep on murdering, see so much petty things. We're crumbling our destiny. But we were meant to rule upon the earth and multiply creativity and love so wide. We'll always strive to show love and respect until I die. And so I will humble and pray. Guide and protect us, Lord. Give us your grace and your strength and your mercy. Swinging the two-edged sword. I'm fighting for justice so nothing can hurt me. Even when I pass away, my legacy lives on through my seed and my working. Every little thing I pray. Give thanks to your grace and your strength and your mercy, your mercy.
Thanks, everyone, for tuning in tonight. God bless.